हरिः
ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविर्यविषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 100. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, "In this way, after full deliberation, the goddess of fortune accepted Mukunda as her husband, because although he is independent and not in want of her, he possesses all transcendental qualities and mystic powers, and is therefore the most desirable." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Considering in this way, Rama selected Mukunda as her husband." But if he is indifferent to her, she should not be. Should she be indifferent to him? But he is endowed with all qualities such as the mystic yoga of anima. Lakshmi thought as follows: though the Lord is by nature indifferent, he does not neglect his mystic powers, though they are dependent on him. Similarly, he will not neglect me. Though he is indifferent, he will not neglect me. I can be successful by serving him. What is the use of material persons? He is the best, having the best qualities which are eternal. He is without material qualities. I accept him because he is his own shelter. Right? Mm-hmm. So we're looking this aspect of looking for shelter, then no one's going to be better at giving shelter than Krishna. Right? You know, so that's the point, because he is his own shelter. He is not dependent on anyone, because anybody else will be dependent. So then she's connected to him. So we take shelter of her, then in service to the Lord, then we're going to come to that same position of, you know, steadiness in being sheltered. Right?
So. Rukmini makes the same point in Krishna book. In the last time when Krishna tells her
find her husband. Oh, yeah, because she goes to each point he makes and then refutes it. Yeah. Yeah, so like that. So we can see as by those the ladies who are the transcendental ladies who are connected to Krishna, then they all make the same points. Right? You know, he's the one you can take shelter of. Like that. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on verses 20-22 in Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 120. The supremely blissful personality of God, the supremely blissful supreme personality of Godhead has two kinds of internal potency. One, the potency of his limitless qualities and opulences, and two, the internal potency that is his own body. The second potency is manifest only in his own transcendental body. The first potency is manifest outside his body and is known by the name Goddess Lakshmi. The form of Goddess Lakshmi is thus the origin of all qualities and opulences. Because he is always perfect and complete, the blissful supreme personality of Godhead is not different from his qualities and opulences. And therefore, these two opulences are not separate from each other. Right? Yeah. So, she and Krishna are non-different. You know, he is her potencies, and she is, how you say? Yeah, she is his potencies, and he's non-different. So then, it's the natural shelter, because that's where they are. So others don't have that fullness. Well, he has that fullness. Yes, sir. Yes.
So she is an expansion of Kundalini Shakti.
You could say yes. I mean, if you're look, it depends how we're looking at it. If we're just looking at the principle of it, then she is Kundalini, because that means the Sarup Shakti is the total Shakti. Like means here, the potency of his limitless qualities and opulences means the whole thing.
Yeah.
As an individual person, within that you have the potencies of internal, external, and jiva. Right? That's Surup. Now there's different manifestations of this Surup. So the main manifestation which attracts Krishna is Srimati Radharani. So just as he is the Lord of the Icha, she's the Lord. She's the you know the in the Lord of what do you call it, the goddess of Ladini. So they match perfectly. It's his desire and matching like that. But then, as we see, is then as Jnana and Kriya, then that's taken care of by his expansions. So in the same way, you can say, but it's non-different. Balaram's non-different, but same time. There's a difference in the mood. So in the same way as then, Yoga Maya will be non-different. So she'll be taken care of. She's Swarup Shakti, but she's the aspect that's taken care of the Kriya and Jnana.
That's Yoga Maya?
Yoga Maya.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, she's doing, just like he's doing everything, she's doing everything. But at the same time is, they're there in that their original form in which their expansions actually take care, which are non-different. So they don't have to worry about that. So that's why then she'll be in the position of Ladini. So in that way, in the pastimes, junior to Yogamaya. Just like Krishna's junior to his brother and junior again to Vasudev.
Yeah.
Right? So in that way, then, she is also junior to Yoga Maya. Right? Because as it goes, it's there. So as the Dham, as those aspects and that, then that's connected with Balaram. But as you get into the aspects of, you know, making all the arrangements of the situation in the Sankarshan, so that's that aspect of the Jnana Shakti. So in that case, that's where you get the... Yoga Maya, and then connected with that aspect will be Sadashiv. So he's there. You don't see him in a seemingly as a form in the Braj pastimes, but he's there. Otherwise, how's the Jnana Shakti go on? You know, as Vasudev, then you see him. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just. It goes down. Just like Nrisimhadeva is there, but it's not really a prominent figure. Is that... Means these things will come up later.
Good.
Yes, in Vrindavan. So next year we'll start getting into them to some degree, and then there'll be more when we get into Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Is Yoga Maya technically would be Balaram's consort?
No, it'll be the next step down. She'll be connected from what I can see. Is she's the one that's organizing on the both levels. But as Purnamasi, it appears that she, from what I can see, is that she's connected with her husband would be Sandipani Muni. Right, her husband is Shiva. Hmm. Right, that's where the thing. There's a non-difference, but there's a difference. Yeah, he arranges everything. In other words, all Krishna, he's doing all this. So you can say he's created, he's doing. But he does that through the agency of Shiva. So all these little details and all those kind of things, that is taken care of by Sadashiva.
And Yogamaya takes care of what we also call it, Jnana and Kriya Shakti.
She's dealing on both those. It means the situations and then who's involved. But specifically within a pastime, then Lalita would be dealing with the people, and Vishakha and Vrinda would be dealing with situations.
Yeah.
But the overall, that will be Yoga Maya.
Yeah.
That's why she can do overall and then come to the pastime.
Yes.
Mm. Like that. You know. So it's. Yeah. It's all being done together. So, in other words. The oneness is appreciated because of the non-difference, the transcendental position, the qualities, all that. But the difference is there because the personality are different.
Yeah.
You know, so Krishna, when he expands, there are those expansions that are exactly the same as him. You know, like in Rasa dance, you know, or the you know, him with the queens at Dwarka, they're exactly the same. But then you have the ones where he expands and maybe in potency exactly the same, like Balaram, but a different personality. So, Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita gave all that breakdown. We'll come through it again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the... I forget the names for those, but sorry. Yeah. Vilas and Prakash. Vilas is the same, and Prakash is different.
Yeah.
So Vilas means his pastimes like that. So that operates. Does that make sense? So in here is that you're taking care, but it's a difference. So then you could say is that Purnamasi would be the Prakash expansion of Radharani. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's she's Shurup Shakti, so she takes care of everything, but she's taking care of everything everywhere. Radharani just stays in Braj, just like Braj or Krishna only stays in Braj, because that full manifestation of the personality is only in Braj. As soon as you step out of Braj, then you start getting majesty. So then the aspect of you know, the godness or the Paramatma kind of element starts coming in. So then, as Balaram, you know, as Vasudev takes care of then everything, the whole rest of the cosmos, from Mathura on out, so then in that way also, then she takes care of all that. You know what I'm saying? But then in Braj, then she does her part. So that makes sense?
Yes.
You know, and so then, yeah. Okay.
But still, Balaram takes care of Jnana Kriya, Yogamaya takes
care of also the same.
Yeah,
but the point is that as a consort, then that's with Jnana. Her consortness is there. Right? Mm-hmm. Because for Balaram, then he has other Shaktis. Or, mm-hmm. I mean, the other aspects. He has his girlfriends and everything like that. So. You know what I'm saying? Because then you're dealing with he means in relation to Krishna, he's Kriya Shakti. But on his own, then he'll be Icha, and then all these others will be taken care of, and it'll go down. Is that like that? Means you always are going to have those manifestations. Just like you could say if you're talking about Braja Krishna, then Gopinath would be Icha, Govinda would be Kriya, and Madan Mohan would be Jnana.
Yeah.
That's all within Icha.
Yeah.
You understand? So you're always going to have these three. Because they're overlap, so that's why there's a difficulty.
Yeah.
We want to, you know, we're used to it. It's when it's nice, clear boxes that have no connection, then we're happy.
Comforts are material.
Yes. But then the problem is because there's no connection between the two boxes, how do they actually interact? They can't function. So as soon as you add in the functioning, then it gets blurred. You know,
kind of fun.
Yeah, so that's the whole.
No,
is that yeah? So it's just that you have the very yeah. Okay. Okay, so then the potency of limitless qualities and opulence, and the internal potency, that is his own body, right? Because his form is manifest by the internal potency. So that form and the external form are actually non-different. But at the same time, as you can make a distinction that he's there and Lakshmi is there. Right? So does that make sense? Yeah. Because we always have to remember is that limitless aspect its support is him as a person, but we can't take it the other way. That's what we have to be careful of. That's why you see as earlier in Prabhupada mentions it a little bit, but as we go farther into it, then he'll talk more about this aspect of the non-difference. Right? Because earlier we're saying a non-different him and his energies, but we're making a very strong distinction between the spiritual, the material, the Lord, the Jiva, all these different things like this. But as we go, we start making a little bit more about the non-difference. Because then in the past time, there's basis of interaction. Mm-hmm. But one's already situated nicely in the personal. Then the non-difference becomes sweet. Right? Because as soon as there's, what's the point? In Vaikuntha, there'll be more of a difference. Right? Because we have to remember, Mud was a Vaikuntha man.
Yeah.
Right, so there's a difference. There's God, and then there's his servants. But then because of the oneness, then it's about, you know, he's the friend, he's the son, he's the lover, he's the, like this. So there's a, it's closer, right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So can we say that in Sambandha, the more difference and less, you know, like a saying, and then in Abhideya it balances, and then in Prayojana it's like, you know, more like a...
Because there's the oneness, you're getting into the mood. Now, you're getting into the mood when you get into the Prayojana, because there is a very distinct difference between Krishna and the gopis.
Yeah.
You know, so you see is that as it goes, there's very distinct how they'll do things, how they think, how they function and everything like that. But the mood is that total oneness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just, yeah. Because the yeah. Because where there's affection, then he as a person is everywhere. Where there's not affection, then he's just there as Paramatma and Brahman. Like that. So the residents of Braja, because of their affection, they see him as a person in everything, as all-pervading. So they don't have a problem. Everything just reminds them of the person. So in that way, he is everything. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Goddess of Fortune placed upon his shoulders the garland of newly grown lotus flowers, which was surrounded by humming bumblebees searching for honey. Then, expecting to get a place on the bosom of the Lord, she remained standing by his side, her face smiling in shyness. 24. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, placing on his shoulders an attractive garland, she remained silent beside him at first. Vishnu understood her desire, and then she attained his chest, her abode, unseen by others. Right? So she's standing there, but at the same time she's attaining that position. You know, so others aren't seeing that. They'll just see that she's standing there. Right? Sukadeva Goswami continued. Right? Because the shyness means, you know, there's one thing and then there's something that's expected. So, you know, that'll bring out, how you say, yeah, it just enhances what is the goal. Does that make sense? All these things are doing that, but your shyness is your strongest one on that. Because nothing's said. Right? Contrariness, things are said, but the opposite, you know, opposite. Elusiveness, then things are said, but it's, you know, it's not quite catching here and there, so you have to work at it. But shyness is just, it's just nothing said. It's just, like, listen.
Nothing said, but everything said at the same time.
Yes, yes. Nothing said, but everything said. But the point is it's the most subtle of them. Yes, more subtle. Like that. So you see as they get more and more subtle. So contrariness is the most obvious. Elusiveness is then half subtle, half obvious. And then shyness is the most subtle, right? But at the same time, it's you could say it's more subtle, but as much as you said, everything's said, so it's the most direct. But at the same time, it's the most subtle, you know. So, like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Father of the three worlds, and his bosom is the residence of Mother Lakshmi, the Goddess of Fortune, the proprietor of all opulences. The Goddess of Fortune, by her favorable and merciful glance, can increase the opulence of the three worlds, along with their inhabitants and their directors, the demigods. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, this verse describes the abode of the two types of Lakshmi. His chest became the abode of the mother of the three worlds, the dear consort of Vishnu. and his chest became the eternal abode of Lakshmi as the personification of wealth. Brahma, Indra, and others became the abode of wealth, but that abode is secondary and temporary. This is clarified. On his chest, the form of wealth gave prosperity to her offspring, Brahma and others. This means she is situated in Brahma and Indra also as wealth. The offspring are described. They are the protectors of the planets. Yes?
I don't understand. What are two types of Lakshmis?
Means, how you say?
Dhana Lakshmi.
It means...
Because it says about Brahma, not about Lakshmi.
No, but that's the inhabitants and their directors, the demigods. So then Brahma is the head of his place, Indra is the head of his place.
But we're talking about two types of Lakshmi?
Means the two aspects here. Two types of Lakshmi. Okay, the abode of the mother of three worlds, and his chest became the eternal abode as the personification of wealth. So she means she is the potency by which everything is basically generated, and its facilities, its opulence, everything is created.
That's
you know, its prosperity, like that, from that aspect. The other is then the actual, you could say, the personification of wealth, the facilities itself. Right? One is that she wishes well, the other is that they're getting facility. Is that what I'm saying? So it's two different aspects. We're bringing it out because otherwise before, as we would say, okay, Lakshmi came out, she's the most beautiful woman in the universe, you know, her grace, her nature, everything, and then the demigods, the demons, everybody was attracted. What are we going to think? We're going to think it's about her as a person. But then, in Yacharya's point out, had nothing to do with her as a person. It's the second aspect of Lakshmi, right? Means, in other words, her, the dear consort of the Lord, you know, like that, the abode of like this, that they were talking about the personification of wealth that they were attracted to.
So it means if she wasn't beautiful, they would still be attracted to her.
That's there, but they might be a little less, yeah, like that, you know, just.
If you want wealth,
yeah.
You have to do with beauty.
Yeah. But the idea is that they're attracted by that side. That's the side Krishna's not worried about. Right? So he deals with her. That's what she was saying, is that even though he's indifferent, he won't neglect. Just like he has all the eight cities, but he doesn't neglect them. So in the same way as she is one of his opulences, as his opulence, he won't neglect her. So... Srila Prabhupada adds, according to the desire of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead made his bosom her residence so that by her glance she could favor everyone, including the demigods and ordinary human beings. In other words, since the goddess of fortune stays on the bosom of Narayana, she naturally sees any devotee who worships Narayana. When the goddess of fortune understands that a devotee is in favor of devotional service to Narayan, she is naturally inclined to bless the devotee with all opulences. The karmis try to receive the favor and mercy of Lakshmi, but because they are not devotees of Narayana, their opulence is flickering. The opulence of devotees who are attracted to the service of Narayan is not like the opulence of karmis. The opulence of devotees is as permanent as the opulence of Narayan himself. Right? So those who approach Krishna in service, then that aspect of Lakshmi who's living with him, then she appreciates that. The others are approaching her as the goddess of fortune who can give all facility. That's the two kinds. It's one person, but they're only interested in this external feature of hers. So therefore she has that mood.
The same principle as, you know,
yes, same like that. Yeah. Because the point is this, Lakshmi only, who is Mahamaya and Yogamaya.
Mm-hmm.
They're all her expansions.
Mm-hmm. The devotees were not affected by the Bhrigu story?
The devotees?
Are not affected by the Bhrigu story?
The devotees are not affected by the Bhrigu story.
Lakshmi Devi.
No, that's those who maintain themselves by the Brahminical occupation. Yes, but that's as an occupation. Bhrigu is known as by occupation. Like Yudhishthira was doing quite well. But the point is if you're a devotee, because Bhrigu was doing it because he was dealing, you know, he was trying to find out, so from that brahminical platform, from that aspect of Brahman. But if you're a devotee, then that's up to her. You know what I'm saying? But otherwise, just on material qualifications, when brahminical, then that may be a problem. But as a devotee, then it's not a problem. Okay? Yeah? Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The inhabitants of Gandharva Loka and Charana Loka then took the opportunity to play their musical instruments, such as conch shells, bugles, and drums. They began dancing and singing, along with their wives. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the great sage Angira, and similar directors of universal management showered flowers and chanted mantras indicating the transcendental glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the demigods, along with the Prajapatis and their descendants, being blessed by Lakshmiji's glance upon them, were immediately enriched with good behavior and transcendental qualities." Right? Because we have to understand is that opulence is more than just, you know, money. Right? It means the character and everything that goes along with that. "Thus they were very much satisfied. O king, because of being neglected by the goddess of fortune, the demons and rakshasas were depressed, bewildered, and frustrated." Right? Because all the demigods, everyone, because they're favorable to the Lord and that. So, "and thus they became shameless. Next appeared Varuni." So if someone's shameless, you know that they're depressed, bewildered, and frustrated. So that person who's just so outgoing and so wild and does anything and so crazy and is the center of attention at the party, they're actually depressed, bewildered, and frustrated. Yeah, so no one should feel bad. How come I can't be like that? You want to be depressed, bewildered, and frustrated? Hey.
When you put it like that.
Okay, yeah. It kind of changes the whole... Yeah. "Next appeared Varuni, the lotus-eyed goddess who controls drunkards. With the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the demons, headed by Bali Maharaj, took possession of this young girl." "O king..." Okay, so at least they got something.
Yeah, kind of going down.
"O king, thereafter, while the sons of Kasyapa, both demons and demigods, were engaged in churning the ocean of milk, a very wonderful male person appeared. He was strongly built. His arms were long, stout, and strong. His neck, which was marked with three lines, resembled a conch shell. His eyes were reddish, and his complexion was blackish. He was very young. He was garlanded with flowers, and his entire body was fully decorated with various ornaments. He was dressed in yellow garments and wore brightly polished earrings made of pearls. The tips of his hair were anointed with oil, and his chest was very broad. His body had all good features. He was stout and strong like a lion, and he was decorated with bangles. In his hand he carried a jug filled with to the top with nectar. This person was Dhanvantari, a plenary portion of a plenary portion of Lord Vishnu. He was very conversant with the science of medicine, and as one of the demigods he was permitted to take a share in sacrifices. Upon seeing Dhanvantari carrying the jug of nectar, the demons, desiring the jug and its contents, immediately snatched it away by force. When the jug of nectar was carried off by the demons, the demigods were morose. Thus they sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always desires to fulfill the ambitions of his devotees, saw that the demigods were morose, he said to them, 'Do not be aggrieved. By my own energy, I shall bewilder the demons by creating a quarrel among them. In this way, I shall fulfill your desire to have the nectar.' O king, a quarrel then arose among the demons over who would get the nectar first. Each of them said, 'You cannot drink it first. I must drink it first. Me first, not you.'"
Sounds familiar.
26 to 28, yeah. Yeah, yes.
Then Vantari would be Jiva?
It says plenary portion of a plenary portion, so I think he's Vishnu Tattva that I know.
Would make sense. Would make sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We could look maybe in the third chapter and first canto and see if it makes any
it's
distinction.
It's pretty much also that it's Vishnu Tattva, but then it's Shakti Veshavatan,
yeah.
Jiva.
Yeah. But here it mentioned he's plenary portion, plenary portion. So plenary means, full. Like, plenary means you have, if you have a meeting, the plenary session means everybody's there, no subcommittees or anything like that. So from what I understand, it would be plenary portion of a plenary portion means he's fully the qualities of Godhead, but what he's manifesting as a personality will be less. So he's a swamsa of a swamsa. So swamsa always means less is manifest. Doesn't mean that everything's not there, it's just less will be manifest. Because he only manifests in the connection to medicine, basically. Right? So that doesn't require so much. Of course, what he knows about medicine would, spin people's head around.
Does that mean anything below Balaram is a plenary portion of the plenary portion? Anything expanded?
Yes, but then there'll be more and more again.
Sure.
In other words, you're not going to say, well, he's a plenary portion of 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 a plenary portion. I think that's
enough
it.
Enough for one, two,
no, one more. Okay, and of a plenary portion. Yeah, okay, got it. Yeah, so it's just like we say das anu das.
Yes.
Actually, we should be saying das anu das anu das anu das anu das anu das. It's like we have Brahma, and then Prabhupada's 33rd in the line, right? And so then, and then we're servants of that, and then we're serving devotees unto that who's serving. So right there, that's that. And then Brahma, then he's, like that, yeah. So.
We don't need to.
Yeah, no, so, yeah. That's why then there's the position 1,000 times removed, servant. It's just to give an indication.
So we don't get puffed up.
Yes. It's like how you say, 10 to the 8th. It's a shorthand for 10 times 10 times 10 times. Yeah. So. Okay. I got it? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, that worked. Okay. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 38. This is the symptom of demons. The first concern of a non-devotee is how to enjoy his personal sense gratification at once, whereas the devotee's first concern is to satisfy the Lord. This is the distinction between the non-devotee and the devotee. In this material world, since most people are non-devotees, they regularly compete, fight, disagree, and war amongst themselves, for everyone wants to enjoy and satisfy his own senses. Therefore, unless such demons become Krishna conscious and are trained to satisfy the senses of the Lord, there can be no question of peace in human society or any society, even that of the demigods. Therefore, unless such demons become Krishna conscious and are trained to satisfy the senses of the Lord, there can be no question of peace in human society. Or any society. Catch the subtlety? Probably so subtle. Yeah.
I'm just thinking that, in Svarga, everything is divided and very clear. So nobody preaches to the demons. They are who they are. Everybody's cool.
Yes.
So this is okay.
That's there. It means they'll be jealous and these things like that. So it's not that the non-devotional qualities aren't manifest, but it's just that it's only the proportion of what there is not goodness in them. So it's like you could say you'll have the various demigods and they'll be predominantly goodness. So you'll say they're in goodness, but that could be basically from, 40% not. On up to where it's much more higher, like Brahma, that'll be basically almost totally goodness, but then that little bit that's not. Prajapati's then a little bit more of, the little bit less of goodness than is you just as you come down. Is that?
Yeah.
So then it would. So therefore, we can take is that aspect of our lives that's giving us trouble is that part that's not goodness. It's the part where we're acting not in the non-devotional way, because he mentioned what's connected to Krishna, right? The first concern of non-devotees is how to enjoy. whereas the devotee's first concern is to satisfy the Lord. So those considerations where we see the Lord first, that's going to be the devotional, that's going to be the Vishuddha Sattva. Then where we're trying to satisfy ourselves, depending upon what is our particular conditioning, then it will take on the quality of those modes. So depending upon the quality of those modes, it'll give us more or less problems. So as we connect those to Krishna, then all those problems go away, because in all considerations it's about the Lord. Though externally it looks as if nothing's changed. Right? Because they're going to be engaging their nature in Krishna's service anyway. So externally you won't notice the difference, but internally it's changed.
So, yeah. Because most of the religious nowadays, they preach that God is fine, but now we have to take care of ourselves. So is this is demoniac mentality?
That's the deism aspect. It does have an atheistic quality to it, because you're accepting the part of the Lord that he's the origin, he's the creator, and he's the the judge, you know, the lawmaker, but you're not actually looking at how he's maintaining and taking care of everything. So you're thinking we have to take care. So it's just like the whole thing is, oh, but unless you do, you know, in the greeny kind of mood, then you know what were we going to leave for our, you know, grandchildren or stuff like that, you know, like, you know, well then, you know, well then your, you know, typical, what do you call, industrialist is that, you know, we'll let them work it out, you know. So the whole thing is, but it's all about us doing. No, if we do this, then the world will go on, and if we don't, you know, let them work. But the point is, no, follow God's laws, the world will go on fine. So it's their own laws. It means you have to be green. But who made that law? They did. Point is everybody was green until the Industrial Revolution. Right? Does that make sense? And then pretty much green until they came up with the chemical factories.
The Green Revolution. They called it that.
They called it the Green Revolution. Oh, because...
Now everything's going to be green.
Because urea makes everything green. Yeah. Okay. So that's the whole thing, is that by these things, it's who's done, and then now it's, okay, we've made this, now we're going to fix it. So that's also a demoniac mentality. You're taking that from that standpoint, is that you create the problem and then you get yourself out of it. That's, demons find pleasure in that. Because it's, you go back in time, you know, the person is, you know, happy on his farm, natural life, fresh air, good water, you know, exercise and all that, but he's out of it. He doesn't know what's, you know, he's uncool. Then when they figure out later that all these things, you know, because they're things, all the things he's doing are the cool things. But you can't do it in that form. You have to figure out how to do that in the city. So therefore you go out for your walk even though you have nothing to do. You know, before, as you just go out on the farm, you would naturally get walking in fresh air. Or, you know, why don't you walk to work? No, you got to go out in the morning and run around the park. The distance they run, they could have gone to work. You know? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You have to be dressed differently.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the whole thing. It's all about, the guy just puts on his overalls and his boots and goes out and does it. No, you got to put on the shoes and the this and the headband and all the different things.
Americans are good at this.
Yeah, yeah. It's all what you're in. So when everybody's running by, they're checking out what everybody else has got, you know. So that's why the one is so smug, because he's just got the latest stuff and everybody else's, you know. So, yeah. So that's the thing, is when we create it, now it's important. So that's the whole point, is by deifying the Lord, then it's all about us. So it is a problem. So that's why we speak, stronger on this point, where devotees think it's that we have to do all these things because, the karmis are doing them, and this is a more enlightened, you know, method. But the point is it's not about that. It's that these things are enlightened because they come from Krishna. So it's not a problem in doing these things. It's a problem is who's the source. So if it's Krishna, then that's good. But if we deify Krishna, then it's not good. You know, so things like, you know, said the other day, you know, said, you know, but then, you know, Prabhupada, you know, he, you know, this and that, but times have changed and this and that. And so they're deifying Prabhupada. They don't know they're deifying Prabhupada because all the history books they read about their own history, all their founding fathers were deists. So they think it's perfectly normal. But, yeah.
Helps if you read his books.
Yes, it does help. It really does help. Yeah, but there's read and then there's study. So, many read, how many study?
Define many.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many hands you'd need, but whether you need the 1,000 Purusha's hands or not. 1,000.
The point that Sharon was just making is correct, if you're saying Prabhupada's books are like math, you don't just read math, it's science.
Yeah, it's a science, yeah. Yeah. So the whole point is it's just this mentality. You are doing it for Krishna's pleasure, that's demigod. You're not doing it, you're doing it for your own pleasure or extended. Right? You know, that's the thing. For my own, yes, that's bad. But no, but it's for everybody. That's still... we have to remember, pranamoy is extended anamoy. It's not like, you know, the next divine category. Manamoy, then that stands. That's the foundation of then the next three. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then if it's they do it for their own pleasure, just they follow the God's law.
Yes, but at least they're following the law.
But we say that if they do it for Krishna's pleasure... It's very rare they do it for Krishna's pleasure.
But they don't have a problem doing it.
No.
Means on their own they may make a few mistakes here and there, you know. But when, you know, push comes to shove, then here they are with Brahma and rendering service and doing what he wants.
And that's what makes them devotees.
That's what makes them devotees. So we can take heart from that. That occasionally we do something connected to Krishna that makes us a devotee.
Yeah, there was the first sentence was a bit hot. The second one, the first concern.
No. This is the good point. Is here connect. This is the symptom of demons. Okay, but it says here, and therefore, unless such demons become Krishna conscious and are trained to satisfy the sense of the Lord, there can be no question of peace in society. Or in human society or any society, even that of the demigods. So even the demigods would have a problem if they don't do that. They have problems when they forget Krishna. But the point is that we can, by training, become. So it's like in the negative. So we can do that.
Yeah.
You know, does that make sense? Yeah. That's the whole idea. Is it is possible. So that's the point. So we're working on the principles here. You see, is demigods are one group, demons are another group. But in Kali Yuga, demigod and demon are just, you know, depending upon, I don't know, which way the wind was blowing or something like that, you know.
Time of the day.
Yeah, time of the day, you know, anything.
What
you know.
Side of the bed you get on.
How you say, who moved the cheese or not, or, you know, stuff like that, you know. Like that. Yeah, or if you didn't move the cheese, you know. You know, wife goes downstairs and she shouts, when are you going to move this cheese? Like that, yeah. So, so you know, it does start the day off in a different flavor. You know? Yeah. Okay. The demigods and devotees, however, always surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus the Lord is always anxious to satisfy their ambitions. Right? So that's, they always, however, so when devotee may forget Krishna and get all involved in so many things, but when it's brought up about Krishna, then they remember and they surrender. That's what makes them devotees. It's not that they do something wrong. We'll take, oh, they did something wrong, how can they be a devotee? No, that when things go wrong and it's pointed out, then they surrender. That's what makes them a devotee. So when they surrender, then we don't need to worry about what was non-devotional. But that's when, then we bring out our sense of justice, and we, you know, it's like the dogs, you know, they pee on the rug, you rub the nose in it, and, you know, like that. So, you know, like that. Right? Okay.
And then you let him go.
Huh?
And then you let him go, the dog.
Yes, but the point is devotees aren't dogs, you know. If they are, they're Krishna's dogs, so it's up to Krishna. He let him do the nose-rubbing stuff. Something that you thought was very wonderful, and then Krishna fulfills that desire finally, and then you figure out it's not that great.
Yes.
That's Krishna's method. Does that make sense? So they always surrender, so at that point, then you take that devotional side. Now, if one's not, one is in having this, considering about oneself and not about Krishna, then you can be strong and all those things. But as soon as one comes to that devotional platform, that's when it's stopped. Not that as soon as it comes and they're humble, now this is where you jump in. Then we have to remember that's also like the dogs. You're confident, they leave you alone. As soon as you show any humility, immediately they attack. So therefore, you can say, no, but it's a technique of training the dogs, but it's, you know, are you going to be the dog to do it? You know, so, you know, so that's the whole thing. While the demons fight to satisfy their own senses, devotees engage in devotional service to satisfy the senses of the Lord. The members of the Krishna conscious movement must be alert in regard to this point. Right? So that means it can come up that we don't do this. So we're alert, so whenever it starts to go off, we catch it and bring it back. That's what makes everything work. We're wondering why things aren't working, because it's not about Krishna. Like that. If we make it about Krishna, then things will work. And then their preaching of the Krishna conscious movement will be successful. That's how it's going. You know, so when it's about Krishna, preaching will be successful. When it's not about Krishna, then it won't be successful. So that's the thing. It has nothing to do with the time, the place, or anything like that. It's about Krishna, it'll be successful. It's not about Krishna, it won't be. Yes? So
there's an argument nowadays that it's not exactly about Krishna, but it's about people.
But what's a people?
You know, living entities you preach to.
But what is it that you're what is that about them that you're preaching to?
You know, goodness, you know, like that.
And since when does the person saying that have any mode of goodness? What were they before they joined? What mode? So then why are they talking goodness on its own? Means as antyajas. We can only talk about goodness because we're engaged in pure goodness. That's the only way we get any goodness. So they can't say, oh, it's about the people. What about the people? You know, so, yes, okay, so now this is the question. You preach to the person, but who becomes the devotee is not the person, it's the soul. So the gross and subtle body aren't what's becoming a devotee. What's becoming a devotee is the soul. So unless you preach to the soul, you'll never be, one can't be successful. They say it's about the people, but is it about the people? I would say it's about the person saying it's about the people. So they want to be Suri Dam Sarva Bhuta. Everybody likes, I'm a good guy, you know, everyone thinks I'm okay. So that's more important than discussing Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So if we're talking about etiquette and all that, then what's more refined than the Vedic etiquette, than the etiquette shown by Lord Chaitanya and his associates, you know, by shown like by Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or any of the acharyas. There's nothing more refined than that. There's nothing that the West has to offer that's on that level. And if it is on that level, there's a good chance that give me a list of names of devotees that are from that level of culture. Right? Just they behave like that, like Ambarish. He's so nice, right? He comes from that level of culture. That's just how they deal. You know what I'm saying? But as a devotee, then it becomes even more wonderful. You know. So, and if it wasn't there before, it's because he's a devotee, it's manifest. So, antyajas aren't known for being great and wonderful. It means amongst themselves they say they're great and wonderful, but the problem is then why is, do you still, you, there was a book written, I'm not sure when it was, I think it was, not sure when it was, it was a long time ago. It was, it, the book was called The Ugly American. You ever heard of it?
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago. So the point was is that Americans think they're the cat's meow, but every other country on the planet thinks that they're not nice at all. I mean, just not nice. They just don't like them. You know what I'm saying? So that becomes a problem. So that's why it's, unless you use the Vedic, what's going to be this universal? McDonald's might be universal, but not Americans. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing that has to be understood, is that, yes, it's about people, but since when does our philosophy say it's not about people? We're the ones that interpret it that way. We're devotees, everyone else is demons. I remember before, Sankirtan meant getting Sita back from Ravana. You know, so you use whatever methods you have to get her back. You know, so in one sense that you're trying to do that, then that's nice. You know, I mean, the monkeys in the monkey army, they weren't a refined bunch. You know, and Ramachandra was cool. But at the same time, if they want to be refined, then we have the most refined culture here. And if they're going to turn to the Western, what are they going to turn to? Right? Some cynical guys that went to an Ivy League college? You know, or went to UCLA, or went to Berkeley, or... You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, and as far as social, how many even fit into that? So what are they talking about? Being nice is just, that's a whole different thing. Yeah. And then what nice? Most who complain about being nice are all from the north. But they're not nice. The guys from the south, they're nice. Southern gentlemen. Did we ever say northern gentlemen? Never. Southern gentlemen. Southern belle. You know, women that act like high-class women, men that are like gentlemen, you know, they say something, they do it, you know, refined and all that. Why? Because they follow European culture. So the difficulty comes is as soon as you bring in this mundane concept, is are we even qualified to function on this mundane concept? Point comes is if the person saying that was a karmi, how would he be socially? That's the bottom line. So our only hope is that from devotional service, then what we're doing in devotional service, that creates the good qualities that Lord Chaitanya talks about. With that, then we can deal with people in a cultured way. But we only have that because we're functioning on the platform of the soul. And you're only going to preach if you see them as soul in that. But that doesn't mean you don't see the conditioning. So anybody who's preaching in the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, are they not seeing the conditioning? Of course they are. We're the ones that don't see the conditioning. We're the ones that what I think is how everybody should think. And therefore I deal in that way. So you get, you know, rough wallahs and they're dealing, and then they're rough. And then when it doesn't work out, then it's Krishna consciousness problem. It's the Vedic culture's problem. And now, oh no, now we have to become more refined and all that, and Krishna consciousness and the Vedic can't offer, so now we have to turn to the karmis. But which karmis will they turn to? That's the thing. What would they be doing if they were karmis? What people would they be emulating? That's the problem. Is it going to be someone of standard? Or is it... No. So that's the difficulty, is that in saying that, then, yes, it's true. But what is that conditioned nature they're talking about? is functioning under certain modes. Therefore, what is its values? What is its methods? All that. It's from the Vedic literature that you know. From the modern, how will they know? Because whatever they say today, you know, the big theories and the books and all that, after a few years, it's totally different. It moves on. Nobody cares anymore. We're still quoting Bhagavad Gita, but now you can't quote, you know, all these other things that were there some years ago. Yeah, so that's the problem, is that, yes, you have to deal with the person, but you have to deal with the soul who identifies as that person. Because Prabhupada said, the doctor is the soul, not the body. Right? The guy's a doctor by occupation. So we'll generally say, the body is the doctor. But actually, it's the soul's the doctor. The soul thinks, I'm a doctor. Therefore, then, the subtle and gross body manifest. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, therefore, they act like a doctor because they identify as a doctor. As soon as they don't identify as a doctor, then they don't deal like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. Is that it's one should be very, very careful in this, because then what one we're doing is we're introducing the mentality of the demons, and then in illusion thinking this is more Krishna conscious. You know. So that's the, we have to remember, Prabhupada was doing fine on the upper west side. You know, all the people that today were talking, oh, we have to impress them. Prabhupada always was doing that in 66. Like that. You know, it didn't. Anybody he met, he did fine with. You know, he's on the talk shows where the guys are the latest, up to date. They set the trends. He's got them listening to him. Right? Like that. At the same time as, you know, the guys that you peel off the street on 2nd Avenue, then he's also got them engaged in Krishna consciousness. So that's the thing, is that this Krishna consciousness, that's the real way to talk to the person. Because that's the point. The karmis actually aren't talking to the person, they're impersonal. They're talking to categories. But we can actually talk to the person because the person's the soul. So all it is we're looking at the Vedic and translating it into how we would look at it from the impersonal thing, and taking those qualities of the Vedic and translating them into Western definitions, like indifference. Lakshmi sees it as a good quality. We'll see it as a bad quality. Like that. Oh no, but you have to care. But what's care?
Attached.
You know, yes, you just have to show something, but do they actually do anything? They're going to come over to your house? You know, they're going to, you know, anything other than being there, and like, are they going to do any more? No. Is that Sith? Okay. So there probably makes. Therefore, we must be alert in regard to this point, that we do everything connected to Krishna instead of for ourselves. Because if we do it about ourselves, then it takes on the demoniac quality. If we do it about Krishna, then it takes on there. Like this. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, some of the demons said, all the demigods have taken part in churning the ocean of milk. Now, as everyone has an equal right to partake in any public sacrifice, according to the eternal religious system, it is befitting that the demigods now have a share of the nectar. O king, in this way the weaker demons forbade the stronger demons to take the nectar. Right? But as we saw before, it was only using religion to stop them, but actually it wasn't about the demigods. Right? That's also a demoniac nature, is that you use the higher principles to get people to do what you want.
Right.
Yes.
But if we don't have those qualities, we want to develop those qualities, the good ones.
Yes.
So we act, even though we don't feel like we act. We fake things.
Everybody's faking, so don't worry.
I am not. It's just the same thing. so
No, but here is it's a difference between when you're saying these things, but you don't have full realization, but you have faith that this is the proper way of doing it. Another thing is where you're quoting this because you know the other person is being religious. Okay, then yeah, maybe we should consider. But actually, it's not for the point that you're worried about the demigods. It's worried that if they drink it, you won't get, so you stop them from drinking, and then you'll work out another plan how you'll get.
That's niti.
Yes, that's niti.
Now, if we say niti, would be also that you say things that you don't really believe, but you want to believe?
No, but you can also be from the point of dharma. Why do you believe it? Why should it be believed?
Because it should be done like that.
That's dharma. That's dharma. When it's done, you do it because of the benefit you'll get. You know, it means technically that's niti. When you do it from the overall, you know, concept, that's artha. But when you do it because that's what should be done, that's dharma.
And if it's mixed?
Then you'll get the, you know, benefits on the appropriate platform.
Niti dharma?
Niti is used, but if you use niti in connection with dharma, that's fine. But when you use dharma in connection with niti, that's the problem.
And also we usually say we are not this mind. I mean, we're not the body, okay, we're not the mind also. Because the mind has lots of ideas how to do things.
Yes.
Intelligence knows what should be done.
Right.
So even though the mind thinks one way, we act in another way, in accordance to intelligence.
Yes.
That would be level of what?
That would be dharma. That's manomoy. Manomoy is where... is you do things because of the philosophical understanding.
Despite the mind and...
Yeah, despite. It means you're doing it because you know this is what should be done. So philosophically you know this is what should be done, so you're doing it at that. But when you think of doing it to please Krishna, that's what becomes anandamoy. Because otherwise you do have those that are nicely situated in Varnashram, but it's not that they're necessarily devotional. So they're doing it because they should. They accepted the philosophy of it. Right? So in other words, you do things because of philosophy. That's your manomoy. Right? But it should be, it's considered proper manomoy when it's theistic. It may look like it's theistic when there's concept, but it's not accepting the Vedic version. So you'll categorize, in one sense, the conscious on that level, but actually as far as situation sustainability, it won't be. Because today they're saying that, but because it's not based on anything stable, will they be saying that tomorrow?
Yes. So you have to be conscious of scripture to actually maintain manomoy.
Yes. So technically manomoy begins at Varnashram.
Yes.
But as far as in general, we would accept those who are functioning outside of that, if they accept that there's a supreme and there's ideals and you're trying to work on that for higher purposes, you know, like that. And so in this way, then that's what will decide what we do. Then you would have sent to say that's manomoy.
More of a goodness.
Yeah. You know, it's like, let's say you have the businessman who runs a green company, you know, so they have to always consider all those. So it has that element of manomoy to it, though it's very small, because it only... as applies in a few things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's not a full lifestyle. That's why we're saying it has that touch. So that aspect of it, when they're thinking like that, then we would categorize it. But the rest of the time, they're not.
Yeah.
But someone's following the Vedic culture, it defines their whole day, what they're going to do, their relationships, everything. So whether they're conscious or not, they're still functioning within that. While the other being speculative, when they're not thinking about it, they're not functioning in it.
Because mode of passion can look exactly like mode of goodness externally, right?
Yes, externally can look exactly the same.
But mode of ignorance too?
Mode of ignorance generally looks the opposite.
Sometimes we say it can look the same, just...
Yeah, you could.
Consistent.
But yeah, I mean, what do you call it? Hiranyakashipu.
Yeah.
Artik is going on. You know, prayers are being chanted. You know,
faith.
Like that. So externally it does look the same, but we see it's the opposite. That it's somehow or another Vishnu's not sitting there, or Anikashipu is sitting there. So, you know, so in that way, then you could say it looks.
Because sometimes we say that it's very easy to mix the two.
Yes. But this thing is, the actual means, on one sense, passion and ignorance go together. The other sense, passion and goodness go together. But when you mix them, they're different. Because ignorance being the, you know, how you say, means, if there's more passion, means you know what should be done to get it resolved. So you're able to do it, right? But that you don't see a connection to the Lord and all that, of course, that's ignorance. And that's based on Sanskrit, that's ignorance. Yeah. So, it's, yeah. You'd have to see each situation, each thing individually. So you, but you have the general, so that you can look at it and analyze it. So
you can have different modes in Sambandha Vidya Prayojana.
Of course, yes. Okay.
So
yes,
that
yes.
will vary
yeah, yeah.
what's going to happen.
You know. Yeah. Yes. Srila Prabhupada comments, desiring to take the nectar, those amongst the demigods who were less strong spoke in favor of the demigods. The weaker daityas naturally pleaded on behalf of the demigods to stop the stronger daityas from drinking the nectar without sharing it. In this way, disagreement and trouble arose as they forbade one another to drink the nectar. Right, so as you see here, it wasn't about the demigods. They just used it as a technique. So that's the difference. If it's, let's say, not about the demigods, but you know it should be about the demigods, and you're trying to do it that way, even though you don't feel like it, then that's, you're doing your duty, but it's not so well practiced. You know, it'll take some time. But if it's not about the demigods, and there is no intention of it being about, you're just using it as a technique because you know the other person has a weak point. You know, that's just niti. You're using higher principles for lower. So then, oh, but what about truth? What about this and that? They're not speaking truth. They don't care for truth. They care about themselves. Mm-hmm. But they know the other person cares, so therefore that they can catch them on that point. So it's just niti that they're using. Is that okay? You know, so you try whatever you think, and then at last you bring out your really touchy points. So, like that. Sri Sukadeva Goswami concluded, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who can counteract any unfavorable situation, then assumed the form of an extremely beautiful woman. Right? So any unfavorable, there's nothing that's happening that Krishna can't counteract. But it's just a matter of what will give the best benefit for Krishna consciousness, because that's the real point. What situation will make it so that we will function in such a way that we're doing everything and connected to the Lord for His pleasure? That's the actual solution. Right? So it's not that he can't take care of the material situation. It's just that by doing it, will it actually make it better? We'll say it'll make it better because we'll be happy. But the point is we know that if you create a material situation, one's still not happy. There'll be that moment, and then it's gone. So, but if in doing that, one doesn't become Krishna conscious, or becomes less Krishna conscious, was it actually a benefit? Does it actually solve the problem? So therefore, Krishna will, you know, do things with all that in mind. Okay. This incarnation as a woman, Mohini Murti, was most pleasing to the mind, right? So he's using, remember it said there was two internal potencies. The one is manifest externally, and then there's his own natural manifestation. So he's using that one for this. So, you know, in other words, he's not going to subject Lakshmi to all this, looks of the you know, demons and all that. You know, it'll be himself. Yeah. Her complexion resembled in color a newly grown blackish lotus, and every part of her body was beautifully situated. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings. So it's not even just what's there, it's how it's situated. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like...
She's got the stool in all the
right places.
Places.
Yeah,
not,
no, that's
not actually stool.
No, here it's got all the Satchitananda yeah, exactly. in all the right places. Yeah. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings. Her cheeks were very beautiful. Her nose was raised and her face full of youthful luster. Yeah, so the proportions, the balance, everything like that. That's the... Her large breasts made her waist seem very thin. Attracted by the aroma of her face and body, bumblebees hummed around her, and thus her eyes were restless. Her hair, which was extremely beautiful, was garlanded with mallika flowers, right? Because the eyes are restless, you have a chance. The eyes aren't restless, and they're not looking at you, you're out of luck. Right. Her hair, which was extremely beautiful, was garlanded with mallika flowers. Her attractively constructed neck was decorated with a necklace and other ornaments. Her arms were decorated with bangles. Her body was covered with a clean sari, and her breasts seemed like islands in an ocean of beauty. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells. Because of the movements of her eyebrows, as she smiled with shyness and glanced over the demons, all the demons were saturated with lusty desires. It didn't say it rose, saturated. That's good. Completely. And every one of them desired to possess her. Srila Prabhupada comments, because of the Supreme Lord's assuming the form of a beautiful woman to arouse the lusty desires of the demons, a description of her complete beauty is given here, just so you understand that there, you know, it's, there's reason. Yes. Right? You know, they that. Conclusion. The goddess of fortune, the exclusive property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Pratigya. Oh, the goddess of, would be is, or? Okay. Because she is Bhagavat Para, absolutely inclined to be possessed by the Supreme Personality, Godhead. So she is the exclusive property because she's inclined that way. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's also the point. Possession means is that one has it because that once. Otherwise, it's not actually complete.
Authority is given.
Yes. But Ravana wanted to deprive Ramachandra of Lakshmi, Sita, and thus be victorious. But the result was just the opposite. Sita, of course, was taken by force by Lord Ramachandra and Ravana. Lord Ramachandra and Ravana and his entire material empire were vanquished. As indicated by the word Bhagavat Para, she is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is enjoyable only by him. So, let us say someone's on the material platform, but they're pious and they're willing to follow the Vedic rules. So, then that means they're taking their opulence, which is Lakshmi, and using it according to the laws given by the Lord, you know, serving those laws. So in this way, it's about the Lord. Though, it's about themselves. But at least the Lord's been considered. That's why it's pious. Does that make sense? But now in devotional service, then it's just about the Lord. It's not about us. So that brings it to, you know, its natural transcendental position. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why the Lord forcefully takes from. So someone does something wrong, then he'll take Lakshmi back. So someone misuses material opulence, doesn't follow the laws of nature, then Krishna will take it away because Lakshmi belongs to him. But if she's engaged in according to the rules, she'll stay. But this, of course, is the material aspect of Lakshmi. Right, but the transcendental, then because one is serving the Lord, then one is always in that good association, a good environment. Yeah. Mother Lakshmi is Sati, the supremely chaste, because she never diverts her attention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to anyone else. If one wants the favor of the Goddess of Fortune, Mother Lakshmi, one must keep her with Narayana. The devotees who always engage in the service of Narayana, Narayana Parayana, can easily achieve the favor of the Goddess of Fortune without a doubt. Hence, one cannot achieve the mercy of the Goddess of Fortune unless one prays both to her and to the Supreme Enjoyer, the Personality of Godhead. Right? So if you want Radharani's favor, then, you know, then that's, it's in connection with Krishna. Right? We don't worship Radharani on her own. It's in connection with Krishna. Her service to Krishna, assisting in that. That's what's... Yes?
All right, when we say that here about Lakshmi, and she is Vaikunthamu, so those who worship, for example, Lakshmi in this proper situation, she can give them up to Vaikuntha level. She can bless them with that, with that Dasya. And if we are Gaudis, we worship Srimati Radharani, then she can award us Madhurya. If we want, is that the correct definition?
Yes.
So it's up to the, it depends on the mood.
The point is, according to what you're worshipping her in connection with the form of the Lord that you're worshipping. So if you're worshipping Vaikunthapati, then it will be, that will be the mood. If you're worshipping Braja Krishna, then it will be in that mood. You know what I'm saying? So Dwarka is Rukmini, in Braj then it's Radharani, in Vaikuntha it's Lakshmi, like that. Does that make sense? You know, Ram and Sita, something like that. Okay. Okay. Chapter 9. The Lord incarnates as Mohini Murti. Pratigya. It can be seen that although karmis and bhaktas may work in the same place, at the same time, with the same energy and with the same ambition, they achieve different results. Right? So it's not what you're doing, it's the consciousness about Krishna. The point is you're trying to, by using the Vedic version, then you're seeing everything in that, the mechanics of everything in connection with Krishna. That's how you're Krishna conscious. So it's about, so since it's about this, is they achieve different results, right? Then what's the difference between the karmi and the bhakta? The karmi, it's about themselves, the bhakta, it's about the Lord. So that means I'm doing something. Okay, I'm in the same place. The karmi will see what in this place, what I can get for myself. The devotee will say, in this place, what will it produce for Krishna? Because one place does one thing. You know, kitchen cooks. Bathroom, you can take a shower. Right? Hard to take a shower in the kitchen. Right? You can do it, but then how do you clean the floor? You know, if you can stand in the sink, okay, but then, you know, it's still going to make a mess.
Explained about the Chinese kitchen, right?
Let's not get into that at this time. Yes. Okay. Okay, at the same time. So they're going to see how it's favorable for Krishna, they're going to see how it's favorable for themselves. Same energy. They're thinking, I put in this much, I'll get back this much. The devotee's thinking, I put in this much, I'll get something nice for Krishna. The same ambition. They want a particular result. But one wants it for Krishna and all that. So we see is that you can't just say, see, it doesn't matter about the situation. It's just my consciousness. And then from that, then just work as a karmi does. And karmi thinks that you can't tell the difference. And then just say, oh, but Krishna says you don't have to. It has to be about Krishna. So therefore, you would want to use the Vedic version to apply to the situation. Because if you're applying simply the modern to it, then it won't be as strong here. It will get a mixed result. Yes?
It seems that both demigods and demons are karmis in this pastime, but just, you know, working under different modes.
That's there, but no, but they're, still it's in order of the Lord that they're doing it. They have a desire to be fulfilled, so you would say it's mixed devotional service. So one, it's just mundane, and the demigods, it's that mundane mixed with devotional service. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that if we do that, then it's fine. So the fun part is, if we take this, okay, all the karmi environment and everything, so we don't have to change anything, just change the consciousness, okay? But if I say yes, but so therefore you have this desire, you just connect that to Krishna. Oh, that's mixed devotion. We don't do that. It's kind of like, but why would we do what the karma, mm-hmm. I'm saying? So that's why I'm saying we have to be very careful that the approach is consistent. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, one, you could say, oh, we just have to use the modern. We don't have to use the Vedic. We just, by consciousness, we do that. But everything else is by culture, by everything else, and values and efforts is all modern. But then how will you see the place in connection to Krishna? Right? If you can do it, great. But the whole point is since we're in the practice of sadhana, then not spontaneous, then all these things help. So the Vedic version will show you how the time, place, circumstance, and everything, and results can be connected to Krishna. Then, so your how you see it from the Vedic literatures, the goal to please Krishna is totally different. But externally, it looks the same. But in the other mentality, is that the goal, yes, is to please Krishna, you know, like that, but the whole vision of it is totally modern. And then externally it doesn't look the same. So it's actually got two aspects that are mundane and only one that's spirit. Of course, the most important. But the point is, it's that metaphysical point which tips the scales. Right? Since we tend towards the mundane, the gross, then by using the metaphysical in connection with the Lord, that tips it more that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it. So we can say, see, it's all here, but it's not just about the gross. What about the metaphysical? What about what the Shastra says? So that's the whole idea, is that the devotional attitude, the consciousness, the metaphysical, and the physical, all three are connected to the Lord. So that physical may look exactly the same as what the karmis are doing, but the metaphysical and the devotional, those are totally different. But if we say, see, we don't have to, out of attachment to the physical, we're saying we don't have to change it, therefore, but the problem is they reject the metaphysical. Because they, you know, all these Vedic rules, they reject. That's the metaphysical. That's what then makes it where you can actually see it connected to Krishna. Sat? Yes?
So it boils down, basically, that David was working on the authority of the Lord and demons are Lucifer.
Yes.
As they please.
Yes, so they might follow. You just like the Daityas, you know, they'll have the tendency, at least the higher end, of following more of the Vedic rules. But it's whimsical that they're doing it. It's not because of duty. They're doing it because they know they'll get material benefit.
Yeah.
Like that. While the demigods, it's the duty. Though at the same time, they'll fall into, you know, it'll be the other way,
yeah.
You know. And now and again, they fall into, you know, it's good, you know, let the good times roll, you know, kind of things, you know. Yeah. Yeah. But they always get in trouble like that because when they forget if it's rolling, then they're rolling along with it. And they tend to get squashed.
When the body is like confronted, this and this is not connected to Krishna. Physical part or something, then they say, but I'm doing it for Krishna, but this will give a quicker result, or because of the time. So then we can say that if you're not connecting it, then in the longer term, then
it might be a problem. It means if they can keep on a shorter cycle and keep it up and keep that focus, but the point is, this focus comes from knowledge. You know, as Yudhishthira Maharaj points out, because now let's say, if we wanted to ask in history, a successful person, would Yudhishthir be one such person? Right? It wasn't just that it was handed to him and he didn't know what to do with it and fumbled it and then they lost it like this. It's a matter of he was qualified to run the kingdom. He knew how to do it. So he was a good emperor. So as a Kshatriya goes, you know, you're not, he'll be in the, you know, your top, you know, numbers, right? So then he says that success is because of focus, endeavor, and dependence on the Supreme. So in this, you're doing for Krishna, are you depending upon Krishna? Are you thinking, because I'm doing it, I'm going to get the result?
Mm-hmm.
So there may be a weakness there. The endeavor is good, but then what knowledge do you know about it? Do you know what's the proper attitude? Do you know what is the actual result that can be gained? Do you know what is the knowledge about that? You, your position to it, your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then, therefore, what's the plan? Have all that, then you can keep focused. So then even if you work on a smaller circle, that's fine. You know, it's like in the market. Some people work on 2-minute, 3-minute cycles. They do all their buying and selling in 2 to 3 minutes. You know, it's just this little micro little movements. They do everything like that. You know, so, you know, some do that. Some work over huge. So the point is that wherever it works for you, you can do it. But you have to be consistent. So the thing is okay, you're doing this, you're taking shortcuts, okay. But the point is can you do shortcuts forever? Because in the shortcuts, are you including the individuals involved? Right? You know, so you use shortcuts because you don't deal with people. You don't bother with etiquette. Those are the shortcuts. When we're saying I'm just being practical means I don't deal with anybody else, I don't care about anybody else. I have my plan, I just do it. Right? Means if others are totally mental and getting in the way, that's another thing. So someone's a good manager can see what's practical and just move on despite what people will say because it will work out. But to use it as an excuse why I don't have to behave properly or include others or see the bigger picture, then that won't last very long. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah? Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how the demons, being enchanted by the beauty of Mohini, by the Mohini form, agreed to hand over the container of nectar to Mohini Devi, who tactfully delivered it to the demigods, right? So here it mentions the Mohini form, because it could have just said Mohini, but Mohini form. That's the only thing they were attracted to.
What?
It wasn't that they were attracted to the Supreme Lord and this thing, and wow, this is amazing, you know. Didn't do what?
You just did the
Oh, because it looked like the end of the other one, so I thought that he'd already did it. Sorry. Yeah, okay. Okay. Because in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, it is said, Ye yatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Judge, who rewards or punishes different persons according to their surrender unto his lotus feet. Hetu. Right? So that's the point, is that because they surrender, they get a different result. But there are many karmis in the dress of devotees, shamshaya. Okay. But the Supreme Personality Godhead can detect their purpose. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish sense gratification, but a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. So we see it's now we're getting into really delicate areas that generally are never discussed.
Mohini Murti is not often discussed.
That also, but I'm just saying this, you know, so yeah, it's all throwing, since we're discussing something, we don't generally throw it all in, right? You know, let's go for it, you know. There should be an interesting chapter. Right? Like that. This one, and then the next one, Lord Shiva, the whole thing's interesting. Yeah. But a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, although the karmis may dress like devotees.
And if it's the opposite?
Huh?
And if it's the opposite, the devotees dress like karmis.
Yes. Yeah. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, although the devotees may dress like karmis. Yeah. Yes, they are distinct. But the point is if the... One is that if the mentality is that, like, it means, how you say, philosophically, they have the devotional understanding, but as far as religion goes, then they have the karmi's understanding. Then, and that way, then, on certain aspects, they'll get the same results as the karmi's, not as the devotees. But because they're devotees, then, and if there's any sincerity there, then Krishna will give them a different results of the karmi's. Because the karmis will get these results and then, you know, try to get more and more and try to be happy, while the devotees will get the same results, but in such a way they'll start to lose interest. But it yeah. So it's, yes. Good point. Hence, a devotee who does not expect any personal benefit and whose only ambition is to spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is blessed with all the auspicious results of bhakti yoga without hard labor. That's the siddhanta.
Okay.
Without hard labor.
Yes, like that. So, therefore, you don't have to worry about ending up in Siberia to get good results. You can get the results by wherever you are. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premilani.